This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by Mook Delivery, bringing you the food you love. Mook Delivery, like McKenna, brings a top-tier lineup. With Leif Davis-esque delivery right to your door, you'll always be winning with Mook Delivery. So the only thing left to say is, you win. Order now on the McDonald's app, and you can also get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus. Rewards registration required. Points only on menu items. Delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Ipswich Town and Sheffield Wednesday will be rolling back to 2023 on Saturday and their League One promotion rivalry, both looking to return to winning form after defeats last weekend, but with very different agendas in mind. This is the Blue Monday podcast. Hello and welcome to the Blue Monday podcast, discussing the town up or down since 2015. I'm Rich Woodward and welcome to the pre-match show brought to you in partnership with the best pub in Ipswich, the Greyhound. We're available live every Thursday, 8 p.m. on YouTube and available on podcast shortly afterwards, giving you all the insight you need ahead of Town's game on Saturday. Back once again, it's seven, I think, in a row, said this configuration, you and me. Welcome back. How you doing? Feeling that feels like a long week. I don't know about you. Talk to me about it.
Really wanted a midweek game after Cardiff to try and, you know, get it out of our system. I would have preferred it if Bristol City had been 7 days later so that you can quickly react and hashtag go again, as all the footballers put on their socials these days after a defeat. So it does feel like a bit of a while, but I'm enjoying it. I'm making the trip down tomorrow night to Suffolk for the match on Saturday. So looking forward to that and looking forward to going to the Greyhound, because for the West Brom game, my last trip back, it was a stupid early morning kickoff. So I didn't get to savour the Greyhound last time. So very much looking forward to going there and hopefully see a few of you guys in the chat there as well.
Yeah, looking to turn our frowns upside down from last weekend. I don't know about you. I know about me. I joined Ben for his watch along live stream for the whole game, and it's very different when you have to talk about it and you know that you're on a live stream with hundreds of Leeds fans. You kind of have to keep your emotions in check, but I was kind of numb after watching last weekend, and I'm sure the players will have felt like that as well, because usually the shoe is very much on the other foot. So yeah, as you say, it'd have been good to have a game to kind of exercise a little bit of what happened last weekend, but we know that we've got a good team. We know that we're challenging at the right end, but it's going to be a tricky one, isn't it, on Saturday? We'll talk more about it. But any overriding emotion still lingering for you, Seb, or are you kind of back super confident as you were before?
Obviously, incredible frustration after the manner of the defeat. You know, if you go down 2-1 and you concede a couple of goals in the first half or throughout the game, you know, you can sometimes accept it. To lose it in the manner that we did, especially because we're normally so good at that in-game management, closing out games, as we've seen for the last, you know, 18 months or so, it's one of our real strengths. So really frustrating manner to lose the game. But as I've kept telling myself all week, this is a squad and a manager that bounces back really well from defeats, doesn't it? You know, we've never lost two on the bounce under McKenna. We tend to, this season, when we've had poor results, we have then gone on a bit of a winning run. So I'm fully confident they can do that again and look to hit these final eight games after Saturday, and hopefully build some real momentum, because we're probably going to need something ridiculous like 25 points from the remaining games to guarantee ourselves a top two finish. It's crazy. We'll discuss our opponents in a minute. We had this promotion shootout with them last summer in a freak League One season, and it's just the same again this year. But yeah, fully confident that this squad will react well, because we always have done under him.
There you go. There's your podcast. We'll end it there, shall we? Because I know.
I was very impressed on the live stream. Obviously, Ben was doing the kind of more emotional stuff, and you were very calm and collected. And yeah, I have to say, you were using a lot less profanities than I was using in my living room at the time. So I doff my cap. Fair play to you.
Yeah, maybe if it was like an Ipswich Town only audience, I think you can afford to let yourself go. But I'm kind of one of these people, Seb, that you know, people react to football in different ways, and maybe in the olden days, I would have sworn and, you know, kicked a chair, and I know a lot of people do that, but I'm older these days, and I'm not going to say wiser, but I can't control what happens on a football pitch, let alone a football pitch that is 250 miles away in Cardiff. But it's kind of like the football gods just conspired against us. As soon as we conceded a corner in the 99th minute, you absolutely knew what was going to happen, didn't you? So that was in my mind. But yeah, also my mind was, oh, a load of Leeds fans will want to troll the Ipswich fan who's sobbing and weeping on a live stream. So I will keep that for myself afterwards. We are live. We want to hear from all of you in the chat. We'll be doing our usual download of information on Sheffield Wednesday fans. If you're a Sheffield Wednesday fan in the chat, let us know you're there as well. We appreciate you. Be respectful, like, as much as we will be respectful back to your team too. But happy to have that discussion. And if you're listening to us also, like Seb, maybe on your way down to Portman Road on the match day as well, let us know you're there. Tweet us or get involved in our socials at Blue Monday ITFC. Always great to hear from you. But let's hear from folk in the chat. And Colin is here, and he is doing something fantastic, seemingly, on Saturday, Seb. Czech presentation in the fan zone on Saturday to the Heart Foundation and Cancer Research UK between 12:30 and 1:15. Be lovely to see everyone. Congratulations, Colin, on all of your hard work there. Great causes as well. We know they're close to your heart too. So please give Colin your support. Fantastic. And great to have you with us, as always, Colin, in the live chat too. Stuart is with us, feeling positive like Seb. Feeling positive about this Saturday. We are still very much in the automatic promotion hunt. Yeah, we are. And no Leicester playing this weekend as well. The kind of narrative around Leicester is starting to percolate a little bit as well. So maybe some interesting pressure that we can apply to Leicester, hopefully, this Saturday as well. Andy is here. So glad I can be at the Wednesday game Saturday. The Wednesday game Saturday. Yeah, that's a Ted Lasso joke, isn't it? I'm flying over from Boston. Great to have Team Boston with us as well on Saturday. And Colin's raised £2,500 he's added in as well. Brilliant. So if you've got a link to share, Colin, we'll happily retweet that.
The book is still available, I think, on Amazon. It's the book, isn't it?
It's the book.
Colin's mentioned it further down. It's still on Amazon. Yeah. So by all means, Colin, if you want to, I don't know, stick a link or something in the chat.
Diary of an Obsession. There you
go. People can click on it, yeah. Well, great work. Really good work.
Evening to Paul is with us. Steve is with us as well. Great to have you. Gary's here. The team Telegram are with us as well, which is always great. Great to have you with us, Gary, as is Richard as well. Nick, another Telegram VIP. Time for a positive reaction to last Saturday's disappointment. The weather report is with us via Michael from Brisbane. A cool 24 degrees in Brisbane. G'day to Ben as well, another of our Team Australia. Loving having you guys with us as well. Ancient tractor. Well, I wonder if he's more ancient than me. That's the monkey off our back, he said. Now to win the rest. Jerry, greetings from a very wet Wales. He says, let's get back on it this weekend. Here's to 3 points. It's also wet where our mate Tim is as well. It's always wet in Plymouth, isn't it? Out west, Seb, it's always wet where you guys are, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, Jerry's South Wales, I think. He says it's wet there. It's very much wet in North Wales as well.
Yeah, lovely stuff. Weather
chat, tick.
Hashtag weather chat. Matt, back with us as well. Evening, everybody. Another tough game to come on Saturday. Keep the belief and keep up the fantastic support. Thank you, Matt, for getting involved as well. Charlie also suggested the emoji might undersell maybe the comment there. Going to be a tough game on Saturday. And then this crying, laughing emoji face. Maybe not. But I think it's a tough game, Seb, and we'll talk more about why later on. Norman, I thought we looked leggy last weekend. So for me, no game this week is a welcome bonus, fair enough. And it sounds like, Seb, maybe a little bit of illness in the camp as well. We know about Luongo, but maybe others have been suffering or were suffering as well. So a bit of time. Get a Barocca in the system. That's my
I'm sure that's what they use. I'm sure the professional athletes, sports science team, they just use Barocca.
Two things: trying to keep colds at bay, and a really great thing to neck If you've had a hard night out and want to get up and be at your best in the morning as well, drink responsibly. Kids, Chris, Michael, Neil, everyone's here. Great to have you with us. Nick as well. Thank you, everyone, for getting involved, and we'll dip into the chat throughout the night as well. But yeah, Seb, let's do a bit of a roundup of news. I shudder to talk about this because I'm going to be really cynical and moany. I think a lot of people have got the wrong end of the stick of these Ipswich Aquatic Centre plans, haven't they?
But the cobble stand looks amazing. What are you talking about? It looks phenomenal. It's signed off.
It's massive. It's bright blue.
Yeah, I was surprised by the colour. That did surprise me.
It's a bold choice.
When I saw the bright blue, I thought, like you say, it's a bold choice.
So unless I've read otherwise, the cobble stand is not part of those plans. That is an artist render, folks. But nevertheless, the plans show progression and a strategy overall that is positive for the club moving forward. And the plans that we know that Mark Ashton has talked about, albeit not as progressive maybe people think, to redevelop that stand in the course of time and evict you temporarily and then give you a nice plush seat to come back to.
Well, evict me from my stand and from my car park by the looks of it. So, bad things happen to good people. Ipswich Borough Council and Ipswich Town Football Club did not take into account people that drive big trucks and can't get them into multi-story car parks, but there we go. No, it looks great. It's great for the area, isn't it? You know, it's an aquatic centre. By all accounts, Crown Pools is quite tired these days, so it's great to have this kind of fresh development, fresh investment going into the football club area. We know the ownership, the Three Lions, have a background in property development, so I'm sure they're looking at this very, very closely. And obviously, the big plan was Portman Road seems to kind of go a bit curvy outwards, doesn't it? Which will then enable you to build backwards. We know the cobble stand needs replacing. We know it's tired. It's simply not fit for purpose anymore. That's where you're going to kind of make your main entrance to the club, facing the town. Ashton's spoken in the past about the club being the wrong way round, and that's going to be your amazing corporate facilities that you can rent out for corporate dues from London, being an hour on the train, and add to the revenue
podcast
stream.
Live events, maybe.
Podcast live events maybe, but that's probably all bigger kind of picture stuff. You know, the render won't be the design probably won't be what we saw in the artist's impression. It was simply to give an idea of what the area will look like at some point in the future. I'd imagine the cobble stand is still several years down the line. You know, it's going to be a hell of an investment. We've seen figures from Palace's kind of design of building a stand, and Forest's design going close to, was it 80, 90, 100 million pounds? You know, these are huge, huge investments that you have to get right. It's about timing. We know we're up against it with FFP. I know stadium infrastructure is stripped out of FFP, but it's still going to be a ridiculously a huge outlay for the club. So it's important they time it correctly, but it's great to see that the foundations, shall we say, are in place for this. The kind of council doing their part. I'm sure there's constant dialogue between them and the football club, and watch this space. At some point we will see what they do with it, and it will look outstanding. You know, we see the what Ashton did at Ashton Gate with their new stand. It's a very impressive structure, and let's hope he can follow suit with ours, because it needs to be done. They need to increase the capacity probably by 5,000-7,000 overall, I would guess, and this is kind of probably the first steps towards that.
Yeah, Charlie asked about what the likely capacity will be after redevelopment. I mean, obviously
35, 36, no redevelopment.
I think it's got a cap out at 35. I don't see us needing any more than that. But I think what it will do is massively increase, as you mentioned, the corporate hospitality, which is a huge money spinner. So that definitely seems to me the plan. But as of yet, for those of you, apologies if I pissed in on anyone's chips. But if you want information about the new cobble stand, the Ipswich Aquatic Centre plans are really of very little significance. Important around the stadium area, the plan for Portman Road, but the look and feel of that render is not something to read too much into, folks. Sorry about that. But I might be wrong, of course. Who knows? Stranger things have happened.
It would be funny if it came out now and it was just massive.
Bright blue.
We'll look idiots.
Does look like the Bristol City main stand though, doesn't it? So
it does, yeah.
Yeah. But we'll keep our eyes peeled on that and expect more from the club, I'm sure, in due course. ITFC Women, no match for them this weekend, so we'll head straight to sort of Sheffield Wednesday in a second. But the ticket's still on sale for the game next Saturday against Chatham at Portman Road. Really great milestones being ticked off in respect of those ticket sales. 5,000 it was last weekend, so hopefully those are increasing. A lot of great stuff. I think, to all intents and purposes, in terms of the match day experience, the club are trying to replicate as much as possible what you'd experience watching the men's team. So all four stands are open, not all the tiers are open. Fan zone, I think, is open as well. More information to come from the club, of course, on that kind of stuff. And I guess kind of health warning about content next week. We've got some stuff planned, but we will be focusing on that game because it's right to. We are big advocates of the women's game, particularly me, and Seb has recently got involved in that as well. So it's not going to be kind of a full pre-match show, live show as we do. There'll be lots of different bits and pieces we'll be putting out. But I guess my polite request of everyone is, if women's football is not your cup of tea, and of course we understand people have choices, take a position of neutrality rather than a position of criticism without having given it a chance. I see a lot of that. Of course, I know people have different opinions and may have got different perspectives and biases around women's football. But this is an Ipswich Town team that is deserving of our support and play the game in the right way. And it will be a really exciting and a really great experience for that, for the squad, for supporters like me and everyone else. And if women's football is new to you and you're going to that game, hopefully we'll give you some insight as the squad, the players and all that kind of stuff, to give you some insights to be able to enjoy the game hopefully even more next weekend. So a bit of early warning there. As always, we try to be respectful here on Blimblunder. We hope people will do likewise in the comments, etc. as well. So,
and even if you're not a fan of the women's game, just tune in to see how many times I mess up hosting. That's got to be worth a view at least.
There you go. Perfect. Yeah, so we'll flip it round. And we'll also hear from Lucy O'Brien, hopefully some other people as well connected to the club too on that. So, there you go. I've done my health warning, got out of the way. Let's talk about the men's team, Seb and Sheffield Wednesday, a team we know very well. I guess probably, if we are brutally honest, the state of play for Sheffield Wednesday as things stand is maybe in line with kind of what we expected. I think maybe it's a little bit of an arrogant thing for us to say, but certainly the situation of how they equip themselves in League One, the style of play, etc., the squad, the tactics, maybe the manager as well, obviously moved on before the ball was even kicked this season. You kind of felt like they might struggle, the off-field issues as well, and therefore to see them where they are in the table, probably not a massive surprise. However, Seb, behind that is some really positive recent form and an upturn under new manager as well. So give us your take on the state of play for Sheffield Wednesday as things stand.
Well, like you say, we discussed last year several times during that run-in how they'd basically built themselves an aging, experienced squad to get out of League One, arguably with a style of football that maybe wouldn't lend itself to kind of higher level and more technically advanced teams and teams with parachute money who can afford better players, etc. But it worked for them. But there were still a lot of remnants of that at the start of the season. And for all intents and purposes, they were gone. They were in discussions to be one of the worst ever championship sides. We forget how poorly they started this season under Isco Munoz. I know there's a lot of stuff off field that he had to contend with, but come October time, I think they were winless, 3 draws in the opening 10 games, and one of the relegation places was pretty much being consigned off because no one saw them turning it around. And the fact that they go into this weekend 1 point away from safety, they're currently 23rd, they're still in the relegation zone, they've got 38 points, but they're only 1 point off Birmingham. If you look at a couple of the sides above them, they are on a downward trajectory, whereas Wednesday, until last weekend against Leeds, had won 4 on the bounce and were very much kind of looking up. They've won 11 of the 37 games played. All of those victories have come since Danny Roll was appointed, drawn 5. So like Cardiff last weekend, this isn't a side that draw a lot of games. They either lose or they win. They've lost 21. They've got a really bad goal difference of minus 25. They are the joint lowest scorers in the league, 30 goals, I think it is, along with Rotherham. But until Friday night, if we were doing this podcast a week ago, the form for them was very encouraging because it was exactly the same as ours. It was 4 wins on the spin, and they were really looking to kind of get themselves into a position of safety. And if they achieve that, then I think that's a really impressive season given how far gone they were in reality.
Yeah, I mean, as per Ben's comment here, if we don't get promoted, it's, and Wednesday stay up, for example, you kind of have to say that's a season well done, or a part season well done for the manager, isn't it? We'll talk more about him later. And we'll also talk about a striker in form who's very much been critical for the recent turn of results, particularly a lot of 1-0 wins. Seb has mentioned they don't score many. They don't, but when they win games, typically it's one person. So we'll talk about him. You mentioned the form there, Seb. Leeds aside, which you'll give us a bit more insight on in a second, wins in their 4 in a row prior to that Leeds defeat. And against teams maybe you'd, if you're in a battle for survival, the kind of teams that you want to be beating.
Yeah, very much so. So they were fourth in the fifth game table overall with the four wins before the defeat last Friday night in their kind of Yorkshire derby. I know United's their main derby, but it was a derby under the lights against Leeds. The wins were against Plymouth, Rotherham, Bristol City and Millwall. So like you say, sides they probably would have had designs to beat, and important victories as well, because suddenly you drag the likes of Millwall and Plymouth back into that fight and kind of make it a real competition again. Was it 2 weeks ago we sat here and said we figured Plymouth were safe given the goal scoring in their side and the gap they had to the relegation zone? We sit here 2 weeks on and they are now right back in it, because all the sides at the bottom of the league, that's the one thing that's really gone against Wednesday in the last few weeks, is that they win but everybody around them, Stoke have started picking up points, QPR have started picking up points. So although they've hit this decent run of form, they are still kind of right in it. And that's the one negative so far for this recent run since sort of mid-January, when they've really, really hit some form. Their away form, however, isn't good. It's 22nd in the away table, so to speak, with 13 points from the 18 games played. They've only scored 10 goals away from Hillsborough all season, which is the lowest in the league. 30% of those goals, three in reality, have come in the last two, though. So maybe they've turned a little bit of a corner there. The last five away victories is last five away games is two wins, Rotherham and Millwall, but three defeats before that. But to be fair, Southampton and Leicester were in that list, so sides you'd expect them to lose against, and a defeat to Huddersfield, which looked very bad on paper. They got battered 4-0, but it did invoke a formation change by Danny Roll that we'll discuss, which then led to a four-match winning streak. So although they got battered on that day, maybe some good has kind of come out of it.
Yeah, they were very advanced, and I think there were at least two Huddersfield goals where essentially a striker is through on goal from the halfway line and finishes the chance. So very much a freak situation there, or maybe overcommitted. And yeah, as you say, we'll talk about the formation later on. That Leicester game as well, they were picked off, really. There was a little bit of foolhardy playing out from the back that Jamie Vardy in particular punished them with, created one, or kind of did a Chaplin-esque kind of dummy to create the chance for, I forget who scored the goal, but and then picked off the second. So yeah, and again, no disgrace losing to teams like Southampton and Leicester away, is there really? Do you want to talk to us about the Leeds game? Because it kind of felt like they had their moments in that, but generally Leeds had the better of it and probably deserved it in the end, didn't they?
Yeah, well, it was a big save at 0-0. So they lost 2-0 last Friday night under the lights on Sky. Did you watch it? I watched it. I assume you gave it a viewing. No.
Yeah.
I mean, Wednesday looked decent in the first half. There was a decent save from a flick on the corner by the Leeds keeper at 0-0. And then a minute over, look at me complaining about going over injury time based on last weekend, but a minute over the 4 minutes added on at the end of the first half, Patrick Bamford kind of ghosts in, the left centre-back switches off and he taps the ball home.
Defending.
And then... No. And then in the second half, the Leeds, I thought, were in complete control. It probably should have been more. Willy Nonto got the second. Again, I thought they looked vulnerable in the space in behind the left wing back. Marvin Johnson's been playing there. Wes Burns, his best mate, has been playing there. And both Leeds goals kind of came from that position. So I thought they looked a little bit vulnerable there. Leeds looked pretty comfortable for the duration of the second half, I thought. Wednesday finished the game with 40% possession, an XG of 0.84 to 2.2, 9 shots to 13. Did you expect a bit more from them? We both predicted draws in the predictions last week, didn't we? I kind of thought Sky Sports, decent run of form, it's a derby, it's under the lights. I was really hoping it was going to be one of those cauldron atmospheres like the playoff semi against Peterborough. But is that just a sign of how good Leeds are? Do you think that they kind of kept them at arm's length, didn't really get put under that much pressure and saw it out pretty comfortably in the end? Maybe we were naive thinking that Wednesday could get something from that game given how ridiculous Leeds' squad is.
Yeah, I think you've hit the nail on the head there. I part of my research of watching the highlights and stuff like that, and even look at analysing the squad, you kind of realise that we talked about the recruitment, we talked about the suitability of this team as a promoted team to survive or thrive in the Championship, and that recruitment just wasn't there, was it? We'll talk about the age of this squad. You know, that's a big factor here. The recruitment, I think, is trying to bring in a little bit of pace, but youth as well. It just kind of feels like you need another transfer window to establish, you know, a squad identity. And he's not going to be able to do that in one window. And therefore, I think when you come up against the better sides like Leeds, inevitably it's a case of our 11 is better than your 11. And unless Hillsborough can, you know, they did get in trouble, didn't they? Again, the fans, yeah. A certain minority of fans, we should say, trying to make it more of a cauldron. But, you know, Leeds are just, it's a professional job, isn't it? 2-0. So, yeah, fair enough. But, yeah, boss Danny Royals made a big impact, hasn't he, Seb? Really well liked. seems to have a good philosophy and a good pedigree as well. And yeah, up there for Championship Manager of the Season, isn't he?
I think so. I was going to ask you that. So, yeah, he's obviously, we'll discuss him briefly. And I'll ask you the question at the end of it. So, been appointed since October, managed 27 games, won 11 of them, drawn 2, lost 14, 1.29 points per game. He's one of these latest trends, isn't he, of kind of younger coaches that's been biding their time and learning their trade in multiple countries and stuff, and then finally kind of taking the bullet. He's the youngest EFL, the youngest manager in the EFL. He was 34 when he's appointed. I don't know if he's 35 yet, but he makes Kieran McKenna look like an elder statesman. Previous spells at RB Leipzig as a coach and an analyst, and then Southampton as an assistant manager, both under Ralf Hasenhüttl, the former manager who that was his Swiss manager, I think, at Austrian maybe, at Southampton. He also had spell at Bayern Munich under Hansi Flick, and he followed Flick to the German national team as well. So this is a guy that's really gone out there and kind of, you know, cut his teeth and spent time learning different philosophies, different ways of playing, spent time as a coach, apparently did all the coaching for Southampton when he was there. So he was the one on the grass tick, so to speak, and done a bit of analysis as well for RB Leipzig. Parallels with McKenna, it was a playing career that was cut short through injury. And Benjamin hinted at it earlier, and as did you. Do you think, assuming, let's take us out of the equation, take Kieran McKenna out of the equation, because we don't know how our season is going to finish. If he gets them safe and they do get across the line, I think he's in for a shout of manager of the season, don't you?
I mean, even if we don't.
If you assume up, the parachute sides should.
Yeah, you know, I still think McKenna's the shoe in for it, even if we don't go up. Do you know what I mean? That's, you know, you look at where we've come from and all that kind of stuff. But yeah, I think he's definitely up there, isn't he? Yeah, absolutely.
If you're doing a top three on the last day or whenever the season finishes, it's going to be McKenna, yeah. It's going to be him, and then, I don't know, they'll probably give it to whoever wins the league. Maresca or something will be on the list as well. But I think the job he's done there is absolutely phenomenal, because for all intents and purposes, like I said at the start of the show, they were gone. You know, they were three points. It was all the off-field stuff. The squad looked disunited. Weren't there tennis ball protests by the fans, I think, being thrown onto the pitch to protest against Chanziri?
Sheffield Wednesday, that was Reading, wasn't it?
I think there was a Sheffield Wednesday as well. I'm sure it was. They were, you know, he was doing the statements every 2 weeks saying, I'm not funding the club anymore. So it was a hell of a risk, I think, for him to take this job. Sure. You know, you look at the position of the club, the age of the squad, the off-field issues, and fair play to him. He's kind of, you know, he's taken a real leap and a real jump here for his first job in senior management. And so far, he's doing a pretty decent job, I would say. I would suggest he probably won't be there at the start of next season, I would say.
Ooh, there's a prediction for you. Yeah, I mean, I like him from the outside, and I think from what we hear, he's done really well to galvanise the fan base as well. He's clearly united. Similar kind of situation to McKenna coming in Ipswich, isn't it? I just kind of think they're still there, aren't they, in March with 8 or 9 games left, aren't they? They're still not out of it.
Yeah, yeah.
If it's going to happen, it will happen quite close to the end of the season as well. And I guess for that reason, you kind of think if he was going to be up there for awards and all that kind of stuff, you'd think he'd have them safe for maybe mid-table by the time this season ends. And maybe that's still possible. They've still got to face us though. And the history, Seb, suggests it's pretty even.
Identical. 21 wins for Ipswich, 16 draws, both of what we had two last season, didn't we? And 21 Sheffield Wednesday wins. We all remember the 1-0 victory in September at Hillsborough. Connor Chaplin, very early in the season, obviously. Leif Davis getting injured, and we were all worried that he was going to have a serious injury, but he didn't. We were go-karting for your 40th birthday then, weren't we? Just to make you feel
thanks,
old. That's all right, no problem. Last game, obviously, at Portman Road, we all know it. The 2-2 draw last February, the 2-0 down, Dave referred to it as a sliding doors moment at 2-0 because Michael Smith goes through one-on-one, takes a heavy touch, can't finish, and then out of nowhere Nathan Broadhead pops up with a worldy free kick, a deflected free kick from Leif Davis, sees the game end 2-2, as did the game earlier at Hillsborough in the season. We then draw against Bristol Rovers a few nights later, and we all know what happened next. And the last time we beat them, let me take you back to the very early days of the podcast. Ben and Dave sat in the podcast bunker, probably episode 3, maybe episode 4 perhaps at most. It was a 2-1 victory in August 2015 with goals from Tommy Smith and Freddie Sears as we started that season incredibly well. We went top of the table about 2 weeks later by winning at Preston with a Ryan Fraser goal. And we probably thought, well, Ben and Dave probably thought, we'll start a podcast and we'll ride the coattails of promotion to the Premier League that season.
Little did they know.
Which didn't quite work out, but there we go.
Yeah, and you're not doing me a lineup quiz for that, are you?
I've got one. Do you want it? Because you look like you might struggle with it.
Well, Barton goal.
Yep. It's 4-4 effing 2.
Of course it's effing is. Is Knudsen in at this point?
Knudsen is the left back, yeah.
Yep. So Chambers is right back, presumably.
Yeah. Smith, so two centre halves, one's the goal scorer, Smith and Barrett, yeah.
Yeah, Skuse. Yeah, Douglas.
Do you want some? Yeah,
I do want some Skuglis.
It was Skuglis in central midfield.
Now it's the wide positions. Is J-Tab still around?
He was there, but he didn't play that season. I think he triggered an option after the playoff season, but he didn't finish. He didn't play. No, he's not playing.
Larson Touré, Ryan Fraser.
Ryan Fraser was the left winger. Yes, you need the right winger. You've got one of the strikers, Sears, because I said he scored. So you've got one striker alongside Sears.
Pittman.
And the right winger. Nope.
No Pittman. Murphy.
He must be on the, he might be on the bench.
Murphy hadn't got. Murphy had gone by then.
No, nope. Murphy was there. Murphy's Murphy up front alongside Sears. So it's just the right winger. Very angry mother that rang.
Yeah, of course. Ainsley Maitland-Niles. Yeah, we've got names chucked in here. Anderson, I think. Anderson left at the end of the 14-15 season, didn't he?
He did. He was released, after the scoring.
Norwich Heroics.
Yeah.
Tab probably on the bench. What a team. Brew reminds us of, Brew was in that squad, was he?
He was, yeah. He scored the opening goal of the season against Brentford a couple of weeks earlier in the 2-2
defeat. We were there.
Yeah, the 2-2 defeat, 2-0 up in the 90th. Who would concede two late goals after the 90th minute?
Stupid. Stupid. Yeah. Anyway, let's talk about the current situation with the personnel at Wednesday. We mentioned the ageing squad, and it's been addressed to an extent, but the big name, Seb, is Ike Ogbo, who's been brought in on loan and has hit the ground running, hasn't he, in an epic fashion. Massive coup. Well, I guess difficult to know how to call it to begin with, because he didn't smash the world to pieces. I don't know what I'm saying. He didn't blow. He didn't set the world alight.
Didn't pull up any trees. Didn't butter any parsnips.
Particularly at Cardiff, which is where.
But he
was
did
before.
At the start, so we can't really judge him yet, because at the start of the season we played Cardiff very early on, and I think he'd scored 3 in 4 at that point, maybe 4 in 5, and he's done pretty much the same thing. He got recalled for his parent club, Troy. He's a Canadian international. Got recalled and got sent out to Sheffield. Sheffield Wednesday, and he's their top scorer. I think he's got 6th in his last 7 games. So despite having only been there for like 6-7 weeks, he is the top scorer for them. So he's kind of transformed how they kind of lead the line. We know him from the Cardiff game earlier in the season. He's pacey, he's direct, he's powerful. I thought we managed him quite well on that day. I know we weren't great in terms of being 2-0 down, but I think it was more Aaron Ramsey kind of running the show. I thought we actually marshalled him fairly decently, but he's made a big difference to them. James Beadle has come in, 19-year-old goalkeeper. Beadle's on loan from Brighton, spent the first half of the season on loan at Oxford, been capped from England under 15 to under 21 levels. He's had a bit of stability. One of their goalkeepers, Devis Vasquez, has been recalled by AC Milan. They kind of spent the first half of the season chopping between Cameron Dawson, who was their goalkeeper for part of last season, and Vasquez. So they look to Beadle to add a bit of stability. You're going to laugh. You're thinking of Jeremy Beadle, aren't you?
Sorry. And obviously we've got history with Sheffield Wednesday and keepers going walkabout, so that's all I'm thinking. Do you remember Bailey Peacock Farrell and
Macaulay Bond,
Bond. So I'm just thinking Beadle's
about. There's your Beadle's headline.
Walked about, yeah. So I don't know.
There's your headline for the flagship.
I've given you the raw materials. You've got to make some comedy. Keep going, Seb.
Christian Pedersen's come in, left back on loan from Swansea. Been injured, won't feature the weekend. He's out till after the international break. And Ian Paveda, right winger, has come in on loan from Leeds. He'll look to add a bit of width and a bit of pace down the flanks. As I said, Devis Vasquez, the goalkeeper, got recalled by AC Milan. George Byers is a strange one. He's gone on loan to Blackpool. And do you remember the injury that happened to him kind of February time last year that was pretty crucial? They had that central midfield three of Bannon, Byers and Will Volks. He got injured, and it was quite a big kind of favour for us that he was ruled out for a prolonged period of time. So he's gone out on loan, as has former ITFC loanee Tyreek Backinson. It's like 2022 all over it, because you're going to say Bakinson, even though you're wrong. He's gone on loan to Charlton to join Freddie Ladapo. So a few loans out, a few loans in. They've kind of tried to address the goal scoring issues, add a bit of stability to the back, and overall bring the age of the squad down a little bit. For the first half of the season, they were consistently in the top 2 or 3 for oldest squads in the league. They signed a guy in the summer, Anthony Musamba, we'll talk about in a minute, who's kind of playing right wing, that's now been integrated. So they have dropped slightly, but it is still a squad towards the older kind of scale of the year.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like home comforts. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Whether you need a VPN to protect you while online, to allow you to change your worldwide location virtually, or maybe a bit of both, NordVPN gives you the freedom to do so. NordVPN also allows you to stream TV shows, films, and even sporting events which aren't available in your local region, changing to a country which is showing that content, meaning you can switch as seamlessly as a Kira McKenna in-game tactical tweak with just one click. But that's not all. NordVPN can also look after you while online, preventing your card details and passwords from falling into the wrong hands, safeguarding your personal and sensitive information from harm. Think of it as a cyber Sam Morsey, offering protection to your own personal back four, but with far fewer yellow cards. NordVPN is available for the price of a cup of Bovril per month, and one account can be used across 6 different devices. Visit nordvpn.com/Blue Monday or click the link in the podcast description for more information about the offer and a risk-free 30-day money-back guarantee trial period. You'll also be helping out the pod by subscribing.
Of the league.
It is, yeah. Let's talk about the change in formation, Seb. They were doing the 4-2-3-1.
Yeah.
Oh, boring. But a bit of a rethink after Huddersfield, as you said earlier.
Yeah, so it was 4-2-3-1, as everybody seems to play. But they got battered 4-0 by Huddersfield and changed it to a 5-4-1 with wingbacks, which is, they played kind of 5-3-2 more of last season, didn't they? It was kind of Smith up front as the target, three solid, huge centre-halves and wingbacks. So it's kind of similar to what they were doing last season. They are the fourth most direct side in the division, so they're still at the more direct end of the scale. At the start, they were kind of second behind Rotherham. So I think the football role's been playing has kind of seen them eke slightly slightly towards the kind of more passing scale of the spectrum. 43% average possession across the season is the fourth lowest. That drops to an average of 41% away from home. And they're quite dirty. 13 fouls per game is the average. Fifth worst disciplinary record in the league and joint worst for red cards with five. Five red cards is a lot.
It's not that many yellows, actually.
Yeah, no, it's all about the reds. They do it in style.
Think, yeah, so yeah, if you're going to do it,
do it.
Got some glory, isn't it?
Yeah,
go down swinging. I think Marvin Johnson we'll talk about is a long throw threat, Michael, but you'd imagine there is a long throw.
I think Will Volk's got a decent long throw on him as well.
There you go. We'll talk about him in a bit as well. We mentioned Ike Ogbo, six goals, seven games. Basically, I think if you stop him, you'd go a long way to stopping Sheffield Wednesday. He basically, if you watch the highlights back for the last 5 weeks. If a ball drops in the box, Ogbo is getting on the end of it and typically scoring. So a massive threat, but there is a lot of pace, Seb, and direct running out wide either side of him as well, though, isn't there?
There is, yeah. Anthony Masaba was the name I couldn't pronounce about 3 minutes ago. He was signed in the summer. I think he came from PSG for £1 million or so. Mm. He's got 5 goals and 3 assists. He can play down either flank, but he plays as the right winger. He might shift out. He might go left to make room for Ian Pervader, who couldn't play against Leeds, being his parent club. He's on loan from them. He couldn't play on Friday night against them. So he might shift out, and they might look to bring him back. And if they don't, it will be JD Gassama playing on the left. He scored the winner against Plymouth a couple of weeks ago, 20-year-old. He got 2 goals and 2 assists so far this season. So they're the kind of young, pacey-ish kind of options out the flanks either side of Ogbo. In the centre of the pitch, Barry Bannon is still going strong. 34 years old, the darling of Sky Sports. Not got the same numbers as last season, only 1 goal and 1 assist. He still averages 65 touches per game. I looked back at the script for the February, the 2-2 game at Portman Road, and it was 66 touches then. So he's still having as much of the ball. It's just the fact he's a year older and he's operating at a higher level against much more kind of technically gifted players, that he hasn't got the same kind of influence as he used to has. He's created six big chances, only got the one assist, so we can blame the strikers for not taking the chances he's put on a plate for them, but still created 55 chances, so he is still fairly crucial. Marvin Johnson has been reintegrated into the side. Isco Munoz froze him out completely, didn't register him. He's come back in at left back. Obviously, we had a brief link with him when we were unsure about what was happening with our left back scenario in January. He's got 3 goals and 4 assists so far this season.
Reunited with Wes Burns again this weekend.
Yeah, Wes Burns' best mate from a set piece. Keep an eye for that one. Bambo Diaby is the huge centre half, the unit at the back. Fellow centre back Deshaun Bernard came through at Chelsea and Man United. They've got a couple of issues in midfield. Liam Palmer, traditionally a right back or right centre back, he's kind of been slotting in there recently alongside Barry Bannon. We've already discussed the keeper, James Beadle. He's kept 5 clean sheets.
19, Seb. What's your thoughts on a 19-year-old goalkeeper?
Well, I guess he's one of these new breed. I think, as far as I'm aware, he's pretty decent with the ball at his feet in terms of his kicking ability. So, yeah, he's very highly rated England under 15 to England under 21 kind of squads. I know they're in a position where perhaps experience is what they need. Sometimes you need that bit of know-how when you're scrapping for every single point, but he's clearly very highly rated. And I guess if you have the chance to do that deal, he's played half a season at Oxford, very highly rated from the England setup with good at the ball at his feet. I think it's a deal you do to add some stability to your back line after a little bit of chaos between Vasquez and Dawson for the first half of the season.
Fair enough. Yeah, someone I quite like. We mentioned Will Volks appears to be second in every metric to Barry Bannon, but does mean that he's pretty effective. 30-year-old central midfielder, 2 assists, second for accurate passes, second for big chances created. Only one less than Bannon as it goes, actually. Second for chances created overall. Second for accurate long balls. Top for successful tackles and top for interceptions, both per 90 as well. So a bit of an engine room type midfielder there. Probably not a big creator, but has got those chances created there. So again, someone to not underestimate in the centre midfield. It isn't all about Bannon. There are other players there too.
Dominic Iorfa never gives the ball away. Do you remember Dominic Iorfa?
Yeah, we talked about him last time in that game with Villa.
One of the worst performances I've ever seen. Yeah, Villa away, gave away a goal and then pretended to get injury so Mick wouldn't shout at him. he's back after a 3-month injury layoff. He kind of plays the right centre-half role in the back three. He's been coming off the bench in recent weeks, so maybe he might come back into it. Do you want to feel old? Bailey Cadamartery. Bailey Cadamartery is the son of Danny and has 3 goals from 12 starts. So he's one that's come through the ranks there and is kind of looking to push on and provide a bit of support for Ugbo. But yeah, when I saw Cadamartery had a son who was now playing professional football, it added to the kind of, you know, when you read that Ian Wright's grandson is now playing, it all adds up and makes you feel even older than you actually are. They've got a few issues with absences and injuries. Josh Windass and the previously mentioned Christian Pedersen are both out since in January, not back until after the international break. Callum Patterson, the playoff semi-final second leg hero, is out longer term. I think they're penciling in a mid-April return for him. And they've got this weird scenario where they didn't register Lee Gregory, Juan Delgado and Jeff Hendrick at the end of the January window. They left spaces free in their squad for kind of free signings they could do for out of contract players. There is a deadline at the end of March, so they might look to bring a couple of those back in because they do still have, I think they've got 2 spaces free in the squad. So a bit strange to kind of freeze them out and then have to go back to them 2 months later, but it's what Danny Rowles decided to do.
Jeff Hendrick was a summer signing as well, wasn't he?
He was under Munoz. He was a loan signing from Newcastle, wasn't he? He's one of these Newcastle players that's been loaned out for the last 2 or 3 years. So I'd imagine if they could have got out the deal, they probably would have done. I assume they can't and they just chose not to register him for whatever reason. Maybe they have one of those things where you have to pay more if they play, etc. So it's easier just to have him train and then not have him involved on the weekend. But they might do it by the end of the month for the final 8 games after the international break.
Michael mentions, I remember when Danny Cadamartery, I assume, was the bright young thing. Yeah, there was a point where he was in Match magazine every week. That'll age me as well. Him and Peter Fear and a guy at Nottingham Forest as well, who's another midfielder, I can't remember. They had like 3 or 4 guys that they just loved and hoped would become the next big thing, and they'd cursed them all. But yeah, shout out to Match magazine. I used to love reading that back in the day. Any away kind of stats that you want to finish off, Seb? You are shying away from giving a key insight because you believe that you cursed us with the set piece last week, even though every man and his dog, including Sky, were talking about the set piece threat. But you believe that you You created that moment, did you, last week?
With great power comes great responsibility. Yeah,
fine.
Therefore, I don't mind it when I get something right about Ipswich, but as soon as we conceded that goal, like you say, everyone probably said, oh, what's going to happen here? I suddenly thought to myself, oh, yeah, they've scored 18 goals from set pieces. They're the top in the league for it. And then 30 seconds later, they bundled the ball home. So no statistical insight this time. We've discussed they're quite direct already. 64 long balls per game is the joint sixth
long
highest.
Games they love per a cross.
Ball. Long games per ball. They love a cross. 18 crosses per game is the joint second highest, so they will look to get those wide players we previously discussed, get them to the byline or look at the overlapping wing backs to swing those balls into the box. We've already said they don't score enough away from home. 10 goals scored is the fewest in the division. They are the biggest underperformers versus XG away from home, -7.
They should have
scored 17 away from home based on their XG, but they've only scored 10. 10 shots taken per game is the sixth fewest. They only average 3 shots on target per game, which is the third fewest. And this surprised me, only 4% of their shots away from home come from inside the 6-yard box, which is the lowest in the league. So we discussed their goal scoring issues. They're just clearly missing a poacher, aren't they? They need a fox in the box, a Franny Jeffers now, of 2001.
They?
Yeah. Signing Ogbo has kind of sort of fixed that a little bit. And imagine where they would have been with them. Yeah, Franny Jeffers played
another Matchday magazine darling, Franny Jeffers, definitely.
Oh,
yeah. I mean, Ogbo is definitely that now, isn't he? But big chances. They were, I think, overall, not just away, this is overall home and away, 18th for big chances created and 18th for big chances missed as well. So essentially, they don't create that many or didn't create that many big chances. And when they did, they're really bad at converting them too. So I think Ogbo is turning them around. But as I said before, he is, there's a lot of, you know, responsibility on his shoulders, isn't there, to convert the very few chances that they create. But yeah, as you said, watch out for those crosses. Defensively, anything to give us some hope?
Nothing,
as well?
I mean, we don't nothing know outstanding. Much, just but... we discussed their disciplinary record. They can be rash, and that's why they are also joint in the league for penalties conceded with 6.
There you go. We'll finish with penalties conceded, because I can see penalties and a red card. You mentioned red cards. There's two bits that we'll stitch together there as well. If you want to get Wednesday insight as well, Joe was on the Wednesday Week podcast yesterday. We've linked to it on our X page / Twitter, for those of you who remember it from the good old days before it became batshit crazy. So do check that out. There are one of our fellow Fan Network podcasts with TalkSport there as well, so give them a listen. But anything else, Seb? I think someone's asking about Josh Windassi's out, injured.
Yeah, he's out after the international break. Yeah, I mentioned him with Christian Pedersen. They're both kind of back in training, but they're both out until after the break.
There you go. So I think we've dealt with Sheffield Wednesday, Seb. We'll talk more about them in the predictions. Any bits? Let's talk about us after we've done some admin. As always, we're brought to you in partnership with the Greyhound. Head there ahead of the game on Saturday. Who knows who you might find eating a Wolfie dog or whatever it is now, the Natasha Foundation burger and all that kind of stuff. So dear to the Greyhound, give them your support. Always a great atmosphere there. Adnams on tap. Other drinks are available too. But great buzz there always ahead of the game. We are back. Flagship show on Sunday, 8 p.m. live, as always, to talk through the game. I can't remember who's on, but I think it's Ben, Craig, Joe.
Ben, Dave, Joe.
It might be Ben, Dave, Joe. I think we might go for, the Holy Trinity.
Holy Trinity, the three wise men.
The three wise men, there you go. Three is the magic number. Join us again Sunday night. A lot of you here as well. I think a good combination of people from YouTube, Twitter, and Facebook. Do give us a thumbs up. We see the 9 people over on Facebook who have Elliot, Joe's here, Chris, Mark, Jago, Adam, Scott, Ben, and one more who I can't see. But if you're watching on YouTube, do like and subscribe. We are one subscriber off another milestone. We have our subscriber numbers are going really well at the moment, turning over really good numbers. So please do get involved. Lots more content coming away. Hopefully lots more excitement for the rest of the season. And as always, got lots of bits and pieces available for you as well. We've got a NordVPN promo. Click the link in the description to get a discount with us and support us in the process. Merch store if you want. Telegram group if you can't make the game. Join us in the Telegram chat. All the links you need, Blue Monday, itfc.co.uk. Lots of questions coming in, Seb, but maybe we'll do with those. Should we do with those at the end? Should we do some predictions quickly? Because I'm trepidatious. That's a word. I used flummoxed last week. Trepidatious of what you've got to say about my predictions. So we'll go there now. Yeah,
you're not looking to lose, are you?
No, nothing like that. But let's have a look at what happened last week, Seb. Look at that. Boom, 8 points to three. You and Jacob had a little bit of a brain fart last week. 195 points, 10-point lead to Telegram.
No
21-point lead to you. 11 rounds to six, if you want to call it that way.
Right.
When do you, if you want to end the feature, and just give me the...
I can't. Then we'll have to find something to fill a 7-minute gap each week. So we might as well keep it going to the end of the season.
I'm trying to remember. Someone really didn't like the Football Room 101 feature. It was probably me, but...
It was you, because you lost. I won that every week. I cleaned up on that. I was the people's champion. And you got rid of it, bought in this stupid predictions feature, because you know you win it. And
Yeah, such a random and weird feature. Who'd have ever thought of done...
Well, you get my scores 3 hours before we go live when I send you the script and the research. So there's definitely some tactical play from you going on.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I've definitely used your predictions, and therefore I'm 21 points better off. So that's great logic. But what I will say about my process this week is sometimes, just to avoid issues on the day, I will update the spreadsheet and I'll just do my predictions, because I've updated everything and the fixtures are there. And I put one all for Ipswich Sheffield Wednesday, because I was off the back of that emotional, that kind of the weekend that was. Having gone through the pre-match research and the chat that we've just had, I'm feeling a lot more confident about the game. But because I've got a process to follow, and because I think I deviated a little bit from that process last week and predicted a win when I was thinking we'd probably draw it and then we lost, for the benefit of everyone else, I've kept my process. I've not tweaked, I've not changed, I've not read Seb's predictions. So hopefully I've done my part. It's a bit of a weird week, Seb. We're missing a couple of fixtures, and actually they're pretty meaningful fixtures in the promotion race. Leicester was supposed to play Southampton. That's now Tuesday 23rd, as is Hull v Coventry, both rearranged because Leicester play Chelsea in the FA Cup and Coventry play Wolves in the FA Cup. So a nice bit of fixture congestion coming up for those teams, and has meaning for us potentially. But any other games? There's a Welsh derby, something you bloody love on the top there.
I'm calling shenanigans on these predictions. I did not predict Stoke to lose 3-2 to Norwich. I've got my script here. I predicted a 1-1 draw there. So
correct.
Not only
you might have got the columns wrong.
Oh, here we go. Right. Okay. Yeah.
That's
you're
right.
Like Sepp Blatter, aren't you?
Just for Seb's predictions, read Telegram, not the contributor. That's all that's happening.
Right.
Jacobs are in the middle. You're on the right.
Right. Okay.
That's correct, isn't it?
I don't know. I didn't predict the Norwich victory.
Do you want to call them out one by one?
And then it's fine. No, don't you worry. No, you do. You do you. You do your own thing, and we'll see what the results are next week. Eh?
GBH of the year, old people. I get minimal sympathy from anyone. Everyone bloody loves Seb. Oh, Seb, look after Seb. But this is the admin stuff that I have to do that no one cares about, and I get nothing but criticism for doing it. Woe is me. I'm putting the predictions up on the screen. I'm having a drink and a sulk. Talk to us about your predictions, Seb. They're the ones on the right hand side.
Yeah, so big game at the bottom there. Birmingham against Watford with a new manager. I've gone for a Mark Venus. Hopefully, I really don't want to see Birmingham go down. I don't really like him as a
great
club
situation, is it?
But I don't want Venus and Mowbray to take them down. Obviously, the sad unforeseen circumstance with Mowbray has gone against them, but I'm really hoping they can get out of that one. But every week they fall slightly further into trouble, don't they? We're all predicting Middlesbrough to continue their decent run of recent form by beating Blackburn. Rotherham Huddersfield is a big game. We've all gone for victories for Huddersfield in that one. And obviously Sunderland, you're predicting a Sunderland victory, despite them losing 5 on the bounce and QPR being on an upward trajectory.
Yeah, it's a long away trip. I just kind of I kind of feel like someone needs a kick up the arse at Sunderland. Roy Keane, I think, has been linked for like the a million.
That's not going to happen, is it? Do you think doesn't he get linked every time they have a vacancy?
But I think it's like a threat, isn't it? It's like if you maybe the owner, the Louis Dreyfus guys, sort of said, if you guys don't win, I've got no choice but it. Roy Keane's coming. When your dad gets home, you watch out. He'll tell you what for. So I think it's kind of that situation. The spectre of Roy Keane, and then a more palatable choice is made. So I'm thinking that might scare them straight, as it were. But who knows?
Fair enough. And we're not expecting Millwall to do us any favours at Elland Road on Sunday, are we?
No, unfortunately not. But
you're not expecting any favours from Sheffield Wednesday from the looks of it on the weekend. So,
I went for my 1-1 draw. I'm putting it out there. And it was an emotional reaction to last weekend. Time hasn't healed me, Seb. I don't feel much better about last weekend, but a week is a long time in football. Home, great record. Wednesday, not great away. So a lot of logic behind predicting a win for Ipswich, which is what you've done and what Jacob has done.
Yeah, I've gone for a 2-0 victory. I think they don't score many goals away from home. I think, as I said at the start, we are a side that tends to react really well to defeats. So I fully expect us to, hopefully the illness is gone from the camp. We'll probably discuss what we're going to do in a second. And hopefully we can look to really kind of hit the ground running before the international break, before these final eight games. And yeah, I think it will be not overly comfortable, because nothing at Portman Road these days is ever truly comfortable. But I don't expect us to drop points.
Yeah, we've got some good questions coming. If you've got any more thoughts, we've got plenty of time. We didn't talk about the international call-up, so we'll deal with that before we go as well. I'm sure the guys might reflect on that on the flagship as well, but we will come to that. Nick put a really good point in there, so we'll come back to that. So if you've got any thoughts for Seb or questions for Seb before we go, get them in now. But do get your predictions in as well. We haven't really talked about us yet as well, Seb. Should we do that now as well in terms of, I mean, it kind of feels to me like just keep things simple. So I would expect Broadhead to play.
Yeah,
I would, despite the angst about the goals, and I was one of the people last Saturday, I'd still play Clark at right back. I'd assume Luongo is over his illness, fully over his illness, and had a week to get back to it. So it's first choice lineup, isn't it?
I fully agree. Yeah, I think so. The only key debating points really are Sarmiento. I think I've said it before, I much prefer him as a finisher rather than a starter. And I think the game at Cardiff just simply amplified that for me. I think he's one that is much better coming off the bench against tired legs than he is from the outset. The way he kind of drifts in field, I know Broadhead will drift in field as well, but he kind of has a habit of leaving Davis a little bit exposed. So yeah, I'd have Broadhead back in being a home game. Luongo Morsy in the middle for me. Travis is now free of the amnesty is now passed for the 10 game booking, so he's good to go. As long as he doesn't get six in the final eight games, he won't miss won't make the 15 game three match suspension rate. Clark I would keep as well at Portman Road, that link up with Burns. As I said in the Leeds kind of analysis, they did look vulnerable in that left wing back space. We know Marvin Johnson does get forward, 3 goals 4 assists, so that partnership, that natural covalent bond, as Harry from Bath always used to refer to it as, is an option that could potentially see some joy down there. Kiefer Moore ran himself into the ground, got the nasty cut. I assume he'll be good enough to go again. And I think just like this time last season, if everybody's fit, we know what the starting 11 will be most games for the next few weeks, don't we?
Yeah, let us know if you disagree with that. But I think Seb and I aligned on that. Apologies, I've kind of deviated from the normal agenda. I'm just lost my head a little bit. And knowing that I'd justify a 1-0 prediction to Seb, who obviously went and absolutely tore me a new one there. Let's see what folk have got to say in the chat. Colin's being confident, as always. Colin's going for a 3-0. And I love how he's given us the full name. No abbreviations or anything. Ipswich Town Football Club 3, Sheffield Wednesday 0. We love that. Benjamin's going 3-1. Charlie's going 2-0. Eric, feeling similar to me. But Eric, we need to turn every week, I think I check in that you're okay. We can win games too. You can predict wins too, but you do you, mate.
You don't. Two all.
I just go where the points are, Seb, for the predictions, but I might be wrong. I will happily be wrong. Let me be wrong, Ipswich Town. Gary's going for a 3-1. Andy's going for a 3-1 as well. CC Drags. I'm thrilled. My granddad has a season ticket, but he's sick, so I'm going instead. Hopefully, your granddad will get better as well. That's fine. But yeah, good to have you with us, CC Drags. And hopefully, a 3-1 win will be your reward for going on the weekend. 3-2 for Mark. If I was to predict a win, Seb, I think I'd go for a 3-2 at the moment. Knowing
it's the
how
norm, isn't it? Yeah, it's the norm.
Norman's lobbed that in completely unprompted. What Seb's forfeit at the end of the season. TBC, we'll come back to that one. Great shout though, Norman.
I can still win. I mean, it's not
Of course you can.
Of course you can. You're so patronizing. Of course you can, little buddy.
You try your hardest. Benjamin's hoping for a Leeds Millwall draw.
I'd love that.
Ben Neil's going 3-0. Michael's a tough call for the starting 11, but I think we feel otherwise, don't we, Seb?
Yeah, I think so. I think it will become the established 11 for pretty much the running now. Assuming everybody's fit, I guess we'll discuss international news in a minute, and Burgess might be missing for Blackburn. But if everyone's fit, everyone's in the building, everyone's on the grass, then I fully expect the manager to come out and to establish what we know as the strongest 11 between that now and the end of the season, and just build that momentum and that rhythm.
Peak Seb on the podcast, that was, and that's too many P's to be putting on a microphone. Charlie wants to end Xavier in for Clark. I kind of understand the sentiment, but maybe like me, we have to move on from last Saturday and accept it maybe as a bit of a freak situation there. Neil suggesting Fridge, George Edmondson to the uninitiated. Thoughts on that one, Seb?
Well, I guess, so Burgess has been called up to the Australia squad and their second game is against Lebanon in Canberra on the Tuesday before the match against Blackburn on Good Friday. So if you're playing football on a Tuesday night in Canberra, I would suggest you're probably not going to be 100% ready to go if you're even back in time for the game on Good Friday at Ewood Park. So I assume Fridge might well get a run out then and he'll prove himself an able deputy.
Call him his proper name.
Edmondson might well get a run out then. He proved himself an incredibly able deputy when Burgess was away at the Asia Cup. So yeah, I presume he might well get that as a run out.
Yeah, congratulations to Cameron Burgess for that call up. But yeah, that is a bit of a slog. And yeah, as someone who's done a few trips over to that part of the world, that the jet lag is real. It's not fun. But I'm sure the club will do all they can to mitigate that. And obviously, congratulations to Burns and Broadhead as well. Call-ups for those guys.
And Kiefer Moore.
Isn't it? And Kiefer Moore. Hat-trick.
The Welsh trio.
Welsh boils.
Come on,
Mark, Travis. Say again?
No, I don't know. I think I got it wrong, so don't worry about it.
Okay, fine. Mark wants Travis in for Luongo. Charlie with Clark and Wolford in defence. It will be Matt. It'll end in madness, he says.
But that has been the stables of the defence that's got us to third in the league. So it kind of does, you know. Wolfenden's probably the most adapt at the back in terms of how we play, isn't he? He's the one constantly looking to receive the ball. Adept, yes, the one. Yeah. Looking to pick the ball up off the key. Yeah, it is peak you. Yes,
correcting you.
Looking to pick the ball up off Wolfenden. Wolfenden is the one who will look to pick up the ball off flag key. You flummoxed me. So I'd be surprised. I think he's pretty much started most games he's been available for under McKenna. So I'd be astounded if he were to be dropped or rested.
I love how you use flummoxed against me. Yeah, you flummoxed. I phased you. That's okay. You try and phase me. Well, you already have. You slagged me off for my predictions, didn't you? 3-1 says Gary. Let's bring some professionalism back. Peter Fordell, Michael Tuohy. He's kind of similar thinking to me, just giving away daft goals and free kicks. Yeah. Tim and Edgy 2-1. Trevor 3-1. But we will concede, he says. Dr. Zach King going for a 3-1 as well. Scott 1-0 or 4-3. It's all the same to me. 3 points is all that matters. Knicks can't make it, sadly, but it hopes we smash them. That will be sod's law, won't it, Nick? But yeah, we'll see how that goes. And I think that's it for the predictions, Seb. A few questions I come in, which is great.
Let's do it.
Yeah, let's put the bumper in for the end of the predictions and say we'll be back. We will be back next week in some form, so we'll talk about them then. I think Michael summed it up. Risk v reward. Just score more than them. I think that's
what we've done all season, isn't it?
Yeah, Richard Bradshaw here. A game for Broadhead to find space in a crowded midfield. I agree. I think we saw little glimpses last week, actually, although, yeah, the game just got away from us, didn't it, towards the end. AE says, since Burgess came back from Asia Cup, 6 wins and 1 loss, he will be a miss there for that Blackburn game, potentially. As you say, Seb, I think that'll be...
Maybe he won't play in the second game. Maybe he'll play the first game against Lebanon, and maybe hopefully he might get an early dart and be back with us by the Monday, Tuesday, the second week. We don't know, but if we do, we've got the squad to deal with it.
Trevor, hoping for a boring last 10 with the game won. Yeah, here. Here's to like just a Leicester-esque 2-0 kind of thing, you know?
Nice, wouldn't it?
Yeah,
nice.
Drama's good, isn't it, as well? You've got a sign off at the end now, Seb, haven't you? We've got to flip those roles around, so we'll do that. I think we've dealt with Nick stuff. Are you nervous we might get players injured during international break?
Or Wes Burns
occupational hazards,
he always
isn't it?
Does. Yeah, Wes Burns will get injured. He always does when he goes away with Wales, unfortunately. But no, I mean, yeah, it's one of those. You can't stop it from happening. You have to hope they'll come back unscathed. And fingers crossed they will do.
Yep. Peter, would you a big win? And Wednesday are as poor as poor as we're playing, they were, Peter, but not as much anymore. Porksmith reminds 47th minute.
I was going to say this. Can I just do this one? Yeah. So Porksmith put it in the chat there. So in the 47th minute, there's going to be applause for Matt Newman, who recently passed away from a brain tumor. When I started going to Portman Road, I sat in the family enclosure with my dad, and Matt and his dad, Roger, were the two that sat next to us. And so, yeah, I spent the late 90s, the burly years, the early 2000s, pretty much sat one seat away from Matt next to his dad. And yeah, a really lovely lad. So really sad that Matt also has passed away. So in the 47th minute, please, everybody, if you can, you know, give a round of applause, because he was an absolute diehard Ipswich Town fan. It meant everything to him, and it was great having him there for those early years whilst I was kind of feeling out the club and getting to fall in love with the Burley side. So yeah, rest in peace, Matt, and we'll give you a clap of 47 minutes, mate.
Great stuff, Seb, and I'm really glad that you're able to be part of the game on Saturday because of that.
Yeah, it's cool. Yeah.
It's really nice, and obviously, yeah, really sad news. As always, we are back Sunday, flagship show. Go to the Greyhound, get a VPN service through Nord, go to Telegram, merch store. But more, as always, guys, the numbers here are fantastic. Thank you, everyone who's got involved in the chat. Apologies we couldn't answer your questions, but do keep them in mind for the guys on Sunday. Do give us a thumbs up as well if you're watching on YouTube. If you're listening on podcast, we appreciate podcast people too. Even more so, maybe, because that's where everything began. So do give us a 5-star rating and a review over there. We do really appreciate reading those reviews. But thank you, everyone, for listening as well. And hopefully, yeah, lots of positivity to talk about on the flagship show on Sunday. Hopefully, we've given you some insights which you can pass off as your own. We are only finding stuff that's out there anyway as well, things that we've seen ourselves. So more than happy to bring everyone up to speed. But yeah, Seb, I'll put some comments on the screen so you can say a little bit of bits and pieces. I think, is there something else that I need to mention? Maybe not. I'm trying to remember. Oh, yeah, happy birthday to our mate Pete. Well, our mate dad, Pete, 70 on the weekend.
He'll deny being 70, but yeah.
Yeah, so happy birthday for Saturday, Pete. Over to you, Seb.
Yeah, it's my turn to sign off. I can't remember the last time we did this because you had the 6-game winning run, didn't you? You took care of us nicely, so a bit of pressure on me. Enjoy the game, everybody, at the weekend. Come to the Greyhound and see us in the booth at the back. Come and say hello to us. Hopefully take some information away tonight and regale your fellow Town fans around you on Saturday. One game to go before the break, and then it really gets serious with the final 8 to go. So get to Portman Road. Please give Matt a clap in the 47th minute. And as always, come on, you Blues.
It's the promotion run-in. Everyone is gathered round to watch. The McNuggets share boxes are there, offering much-needed distraction. Your mate's already been booked for double dipping, but in you swoop to steal the last nugget and claim all 3 points. Oh, and there is the Harry Clark fist pump to celebrate. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in at participating restaurants.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.